Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show 48 of the Lensless Podcast. This week's guest is Jeff McConnell. Jeff comes to talk to us about some of his projects, some of his cameras that he's made, and we have a call in from Matt Jones. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 48, and welcome back. We have Andrew, either you love him or hate him, Bartram.
Do you spend all week just trying to think up these little introductions?
I do, actually.
Loves me. It's you. You're the problem.
I'm the hate end. Awesome. How's it going, Andrew? How are you?
I'm suddenly feeling a bit poorly this afternoon. I think I've got a touch of man flu coming on. Uh-oh. I've got a sore throat. I keep coughing, and I keep looking for sympathy from Julie, but she doesn't give me any.
Good for her.
But yeah, it's been I had a nice day in the darkroom yesterday, and I was doing some contact prints, 8x10 contact prints from that.
I saw that. I like the picture you shot of the canal with the fence posts.
Yeah, that's the one. I've got another one of an old fishing boat on its side, which I'll be sharing. These are just resin coated contact prints. I thought I'd see how that turned out, and then I'll make some fiber prints. But right. I'm really pleased so far. I don't know what your experience is with X-ray film, but certainly I love the way the skies have come out. It's kind of imperfect, you know, almost looks like an alternative process. Yeah. I don't know whether it's just my incompetence or it's just inherent in the X-ray film.
But I got that same thing too with mine. I got even like higher contrast with mine. But once I figured out not to agitate, you know, and just to let it sit.
Well, these negatives are quite flat contrast because they've been pretty useless for my salt printing. Did you know I made salt prints?
Do you?
Yeah.
What about lift?
Yeah. Oh, and that too. Yeah. So I need to produce negatives of greater contrast. For these contact prints, I'd actually set the grade on the enlarger head to grade 4.5 to get a bit of punch into them. And then on that picture with the post, I used some liquid sunshine to bleach some parts of the image to make it a bit contrastier in places. So that, and I posted a little video. When you get time, look at my video on the Lensless Podcast photo. What are we called? Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah.
So I posted a little video of doing some bleaching work on that very picture. I thought I'd overdone it, actually. In fact, I think I might have overdone it a bit on the post. But when I scanned the print, it looks fine. So I'm going to do some fiber contact prints, I think. So I'm really excited to use more X-ray film in that 8x10 camera. I just wish I hadn't bought 10x12 X-ray film.
Well, you just got to cut it down. At least you don't have to do it in the complete darkness.
Yeah, but it's still a ball's ache. I'd rather have just bought 8x10. I'm sure I ordered 8x10 film and they've sent me 10x12.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So have you been doing anything other than work and looking after kids?
This week... Not too much this week. I've got my postcards, the Ilford postcard stocks from Ilford, because I signed up for Moni's postcard swap, that group.
Yep.
So I'm going to be printing some of those.
I'm paired up with Todd this month.
Are you really?
Mm.
Cool.
Sent mine off already, because last time I went in the darkroom to make postcard prints, I made a few just so I was ready for the next one.
Excuse me. Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. I didn't even think about doing that. But I'm really excited because now that I've gotten into doing 4x5, I can just contact print right to it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's going to be exciting. And I'm waiting for a camera. I got a new camera coming. It should be here.
Another one. You talk about me. You made me feel really guilty about having too many pinhole cameras.
You still have way more than I do, though. I don't even have hardly any, and you still have more than me. So,
well, I'm going to give one away, and we'll maybe talk about that. I'm not quite sure when our one-year anniversary is, but...
I'm going to do the same with one of mine, too.
Are you? Okay, we'll maybe chat about it. When is our one-year anniversary? What show is it?
I think it's the beginning of March, 52. No, show number 52.
Okay.
The beginning of March will be a year, yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yep. We can. I forget who we've got on then, but we've got guests lined up pretty much through March, I think.
I thought you were just about to say, I forget who we have on today, but.
Oh, do we have a guest today? I thought it was just you and me.
No, I'm lurking here.
He's lurking. So this week, honest, we have Jeff.
We do.
I'll let you say his last name, Andrew.
McConnell.
Greetings from New Jersey.
How are you, Jeff?
Hello from the Garden State. Oh, life is good. I'm talking to you from the side of this little funny lake right below where I live called Lake Solitude.
Wow, cool. That sounds lovely.
There are many months-long solograph pictures made of this lake since it's so close to my house. And it's funny. There are really beautiful places in New Jersey, although there still are no green. Unlike you, Corey, we don't have flowers and daffodils yet. It's all real.
Yeah.
Still kind of wintry. I see some snow here on the
ground. They're popping up along my driveway right now, actually.
We have snow drops, and I saw my first daffodil today.
Yeah, I'm driving to North Carolina actually next weekend, and I will be happy to see all that green because you get it a good month before we do.
Are you going to see Corey?
No, I'm going to Raleigh, so it's a bit too far west for him, I think.
Is it?
Raleigh's, three-hour drive.
Yeah, I'm just me and my son, only the two of us are going for just a quick jaunt.
Cool.
So you're sitting in your car by a lake talking to yourself.
Yes. I'm being guarded by the benevolent Totoro on my dashboard. Yeah.
I was just about to say, ironically, I'm looking at your webpage and it's the picture of, are you sitting in the same car?
Oh, no, that car is long gone. That was an old Saab. It kind of looks like a turtle. I had a long love affair with Saabs and I had a bunch of different ones.
Is that the one with the slight magenta-y skies and the
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I think I made that picture when I was driving back from picking up that machine.
Oh, really?
It came from South Dakota, and I flew out there, one-way flight, bought the car from some guy who regretted selling it to me, and I just barely made it back to Jersey.
I was going to say, that's taking quite the risk on that one there.
It looks like you're driving into another dimension, doesn't it? It's great.
I was lucky. Yeah. Those kind of pictures, you know, you see them around. It's a good thing to do with the pinhole cameras to make these photos of the oncoming world through a moving window, but some of them are better than others, and that one turned out okay.
I love the clouds. That's what I call those clouds, the light speed clouds. It reminds me of that. Did you ever watch that show called Quantum Leap?
No.
Yeah, I did years ago.
Yeah. Flying to the crowds.
I didn't think you were that old.
I'm not. I just watch a lot of TV. Watch a lot of TV, Andrew.
Folks, we're talking to Jeff, and I think largely, I mean, Jeff's on Instagram. He also has his website at jeffmcconnell.net, JeffMcConnell.
Underscore.
JeffMcConnell. Yes. Underscore pinhole.
And you can also type in howthingslook.com. Yeah.
Howthingslook.
Because
yes.
That was an old domain, and it's just so much easier to spell than my name.
Well, that's your other Instagram feed, isn't it?
Sort right. Well, yeah. I started with just one, and then I decided at some point, it's like, well, I should split off the, you know, cheesy photos of kids and reposting of other people's photos and put my own photo on a separate feed. So now there's two.
I think it's really interesting. It's really interesting the way people are using Instagram, and people use it in all different ways, don't they? Some people use it just to showcase their work. Some people use it for the sort of photography things they're up to, you know, pictures of their camera or whatever, you know.
Well, you can put anything there. I mean, I just saw a guy who I admire and follow his work just posted that he was really just had it with all the ads that are on there.
And there are a lot now, aren't there? There are a lot.
It's a free service. If you're going to join these free things, then you sort of have to.
Yeah.
But there's a definite double-edged sword because there's a lot of nasty data collection and who knows what they're doing with it. But, you know, I'm not going to quit. I think I figure that whatever the whatever they're collecting on me, it's probably okay.
I think they're getting ready to do like a pay service too with Instagram, where you can.
Do you think anybody will do it? I mean, there's
I don't
so
know.
Many...
Well, you can get it cut, like you can get commercial free. You know, like I think that's
yeah,
why they're
well,
ramping
I can
it up.
See how they would do that.
So who knows? I don't know. But anyways,
simple photography. Yes. Yeah. All you need is a box. You don't need a cell phone.
You don't need
actually.
Any
you
that
can
stuff.
Use the box that the cell phone came in.
I have one of those.
Like
actually.
like Maurice Fitzpatrick continues to recycle every imaginable container and then produces amazing photographs with them. So
that's awesome.
You should get Maurice to do this show.
That's a good idea.
I'll say it on the air.
Well, Curry's in charge of filling the dates in April, so I'll just April. Add M-A-U. I've been following Maurice's work for a time. It's Fitzpatrick, isn't it?
Yeah, he lives not too far from here. Actually,
you know what Fitz stands for, don't you?
I do not.
Bastard son of a knight.
Wow, well, he won't be doing your podcast
well,
now.
Well, geez, that was what I said, Andrew. Andrew, you should filter these things before you say
them. No, it
hey,
means...
it's a podcast.
So
going
back into...
You don't have to worry
going
about
back
the
into Listen, it's a history lesson. It's not, I'm not being rude. So going back into medieval times, or, you know, days of yore, when men were men and women did as they were told, when we had shining knights in shining armour, if you sired a child out of wedlock, then the chances are they would have the prefix Fitz put with your name.
Never heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah, bastard
well,
son
you know,
of a knight.
We Americans all have sordid pasts anyway, so you know it's something like that buried far back in history. It just doesn't matter.
So we'll you can save that little interesting fact for when Maurice comes on.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Thanks. I'll start it off with the show. I'll just say, "Hey, Maurice,
just leave it here."
Show, I just want to know.
We talk about something else.
So anyway, it's lovely. It's lovely to have a guest after just me and Corey last week.
I don't mind it. It's nice.
Now and again, it's okay just talking to you.
I like spending my Sundays with you.
Well, congratulations, you guys, for doing this. By the way, it's great. I've met more people that I didn't know thanks to this podcast.
Awesome.
So
thank you.
It's a good thing. And just, you know, part of this, photography in general can cover so many different things. And even before there was all this internet business, there's like so many different kinds of what is photography, who uses it, how. And the thing about pinhole world is that it's so kind of democratic and open. There's not too much of people sort of holding their cards really close to their vest, which is what happens in a professional photography context where nobody wants to give anything away. Instead, you're much more, everyone's just giving out, you know,
whatever
they have and in exchange. And so that's what makes it great. And that's one of the things I really love about it.
I think that's true of not just pinhole analog photography, but the analog photography community as a whole. You know, I mean, folks are just generally, you know, fairly forgiving and,
well, it is in digital stuff where you're like a professional landscape photographer and you're not giving away your presets or, I don't know. You know what I mean? Just kind of.
Well, but this sort of analog idea is fairly new. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, there was really mostly analog was,
well,
there wasn't
was just,
a need to make a distinction because there was photography.
Just, that was just the
and
world.
Photography
wasn't it?
Was a chemical process. And now, it's a bit of a, I don't know, the whole sort of analog versus digital. I sort of feel like it's all about looking. It's all about paying attention. It's all about what tools are going to use. Because half of us that use simple lensless boxes to make photographs, then plug them into our computers and output them there. So there's a real blend of it. I mean, for example, the Solargraphs, you know, you would have a hard time doing that without digital technology.
Sure.
I mean, it did happen. The guy who invented that or discovered it, sort of the first one that I was able to find, was back in the late 70s and early 80s. There's someone in Italy who was making these long-term recordings of the sun. But then, you know, once we were able to use scanners and manipulate the images in computers more easily, it sort of became something that wasn't just a curiosity and more people could do it. So, you know, yeah, I get it. You know, and at the same time, I'm walking around like snapping everything with my phone to the point where I hardly carry any lens camera anymore because it's just a pain.
I don't either.
The phone is so easy.
It is totally. I mean, it's that's And that's why I kind of got away from like 35 millimeter, because I would shoot it, develop it, then I'd have to scan it, and I'd only, you know, like I just wasn't happy with what I was getting, you know. I don't know, it just was.
If anything, now I carry a pinhole camera with me most of the time, and our previous co-host Mark, Three Eyed Monster. I mean, he said recently in a post, you know, he just carries it around. It's almost like his iPhone now. And I suppose if it's medium format, then it's, you know, that's quite good.
Well, I carry my little 6x6. I have the reality so. Yeah, I mean, me I carry too. That with me everywhere. I don't always have that with me.
Alex, our good friend of the show, Grainy Blur, Alex Purcell has just come back from Disneyland, and he was using his, you know, that Zorky 4K that we chatted about a few shows ago, the one he's converted to a super wide 35mm pinhole.
Franken pinhole or whatever?
Yeah, and he was using
Zorky hole.
Yeah, and that was his snapshot camera for. And if you go onto the Lenses Podcast Facebook group and you look for Alex's work, you'll see he's sharing all his Disney images now, and they're just great. You know, snapshots of his kids and selfies. And you know it's brilliant.
So Jeff, well, I mean, you can use that. That's the thing about if there's no lens, then you can sort of design the camera to look at the world the way you imagine it, and you're not bound by decisions made by, you know, Nikon or Fuji or any of these camera makers. You can just look at the optics and sort of imagine, well, how do I want this to work? To the point of even not having your film or paper surface be flat, you can, and so the limits are not even there for how you can make these machines, and then you can find out how they see, so you can design the camera to see the thing that you want to sort of represent, which is harder to do with, you know, a cell phone or some other camera that's been designed for you and put in
those
your hand.
Parameters already set on it.
Pinhole photography is really just bounded by your own imagination, really, I think. And
or you could, by the same token, you could just get, you know, your Ondu 6x6 camera and just use that and learn how it sees and try to think of ways to make that interesting, you know. And so it's really just a subset of all the different ways of looking at the world.
So Jeff, you touched on solography a little while ago, and maybe that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
In if we're going to have any structure at all, let's talk about
solography. Well, how about this? I'll tell you like how I found pinhole in the first place.
Go on then.
Because I didn't really look for it, and I knew that people did that, and I thought that you needed an oatmeal can, and that you had to go into the dark room each time you took a picture, and that seemed like a real pain in the butt. I didn't want to do it, and then I was doing this project where I was photographing in the street and using an old sort of little baby view camera on a tripod. And so I was already just slow and eccentric, and no one knew what to make of that. But I wanted to make wider panoramic pictures, and I couldn't find a camera for this. And I really admired this Czech photographer named Joseph Sudek, who did a huge series of panoramic photographs there in Prague. And the camera that he used was something that you know, this was the early days of eBay, and I wasn't going to pay whatever people were asking for it. And my professor, who was named Martha Madigan at the Tyler School in Philly, might have suggested, well, why don't you try pinhole? Because, you know, it throws a circle of light that's wide enough that you could do that. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know. I'll do it if I can use film. But it was a challenge, so I sort of made this camera design and, you know, went through some iterations and finally landed on this camera that took four exposures on a roll of 120. They were really wide and they were skinnier than normal because I made the guts of it out of an old box brownie, which I hacked. And it took roll film. And so then I took that along with me on a trip because I had this other project I wanted to work on. And when I got back, the pictures that I had made with this pinhole camera were, to me, more interesting than the ones that I had used this other sort of lens, somehow more sophisticated machine. And that was the beginning. And from there, I just made, you know, I built a couple different generations of these it ended up being a 6x12 curved back camera that took 120 film. Nice. And I just used those for a long time. And I, you know, the last one I still use, and it's a good machine. I hacked apart a bunch of Mamiya Flex cameras because I used their film carriage parts and some shutter parts and things like that. But a few years ago, I was home with my daughter who was a baby. And after about a year of being stay home dad of a small child, I thought, this has got to stop. You know, I've got to do something, yeah. Something that's for myself again.
Sure.
And the pinhole photography was always there, but I sort of thought, okay, I'm going to pull this out. And in the meantime, you know, social media had happened and I kind of missed the heyday of Flickr. And I discovered, you know, that there was a thing called Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day. And mm-hmm. there was a bunch of you guys out there making stuff and putting it on Facebook. And so I started connecting with people. And one of the people that I connected with fairly early was Jesus Hoglar. I might say his last name wrong, but in Barcelona. And he makes solographs and has for some time. And I knew him for a couple of years. And a couple of other people I knew were also doing solographs, like Joanna Moore up in Maine did a big project along a river up there with solographs. And so I decided to give it a shot. So I asked them for advice and off I went.
And what did they tell you?
I know you're talking about with the river one. I was going to
Joanna, you mean?
Yeah, Joanna. I'm sorry. I wanted to invite her on the show because I read an article about she was doing that. It's like 100 mile stretch of a river.
She did a big project. It was a few years ago. I can't remember. I mean, mm-hmm. She lived in Philly too. That's kind of how I met her. Although I've only seen her on the social nets, but yeah, no. I mean, the thing about these solograph pictures that kind of stymied me at first is there's no chemical processing of it. You just it's like lumen prints, which was something I hadn't heard of until sometime after I heard of solographs. But you know, lumen print is sort of a photogram made with photographic paper, where the you know when you leave photo paper that's not been processed out in the light, it turns dark, and if you put something on there, then you can get photograms and make some really beautiful prints, like Kai Lewis in London is really great at those.
Ooh, she's on the show in a few weeks.
Yeah,
good. I can't wait to hear. So these negatives that you get out of a solograph camera, and it can be anything, but you know, I use soda cans because they're free and they don't fall apart in the rain and other things like that. But you just put the hole in there and you put some paper in there and then you put it somewhere where you hope that it won't move too much and that it might actually be there when you come back. And then when you open the can, then you see a sort of lumen print-ish negative image, including these trails of the sun passing across if you pointed it the right direction or if you wanted that. Some people point the cameras at the buildings and then catch the reflection of the sun in the windows. You can...
Are you generally going from now? Let me get this right. Mid-year to winter time. What's the time period that you're?
I did a big batch of these things. I tested it a few years ago, and they worked, and I liked it. And I was like, okay, you know, what can I do with these? And I decided to just seed them all around this county where I live. And so I put out, you know, I don't know, a few hundred really. And driving all up and down, the kids just ridiculed me. First of all, because I would go to the recycling depot and get the empty cans, because I never buy anything that comes in cans, and then they would moan that they smelled terrible. And then because I just had boxes full of these cameras in the back of my car all the time and a stepladder, and I would hop out and paste them to a light post, you know, at a moment's notice. But I put them all around, and I set them out at one of the What did I do? I set them out at one of the solstice. Either set it out in the fall, no, equinox. Set it out at the fall equinox and pick them up at the winter solstice. Or set them out at winter solstice and pick them up in the spring. And I thought, okay, 3 months is good because then the sun's lower in the sky and it's a long enough exposure. But after I did that, I decided, well, you know, it doesn't have to be from these mark points through the year, the solstices and the equinoxes. It could just be for a week or two. Like I took some with me once. I went to the beach with some friends, and I was there for 4 or 5 days, and I just taped the can to a post out on the beach and got one of the pictures that I really like a lot. So you don't need a lot of time. And you can mess with things like how big the holes are. And I mean, this was something that I learned. My professor, Martha, who first instructed me on the ideas of pinhole photography, it was so vague. She just said, well, just look at the pinhole with a loop on the light table and make sure that it's perfectly round and make it as small as you can make it. And that was it. There was no discussion of aperture or formulas for the appropriate pinhole size or anything. And so it was kind of just dumb luck that I made the pinhole sort of the right size for those cameras that I built at first. And since then, you know, I did some research and figured out, you know, well, what you're kind of quote supposed to do, unquote.
Right.
But at the same time, there's plenty of people who would just, you know, blow through what you're supposed to do and come up with amazing imagery. And that's one of the things that's great about this as a medium is that it just sort of doesn't matter. You can make up your own rules. And if something doesn't work, then you make another one and just see what you can get.
Cool.
And somewhere, somebody posted a comment. I think, you know, someone made a camera and posted a picture from it. And they said, yeah, I don't know if I like this. It's kind of too clean. And someone wrote underneath there, yeah, don't you hate that when you make the camera and it just doesn't have that character. But the good thing about, you know, this as a medium is you just pull that little piece of metal out if you don't like it and put another one there. As long as the box doesn't leak light, you can.
Yeah,
and I've done that plenty of times. Like, you know, I asked Todd Schlemmer at some point. I bought one of his first cameras because I had a project I wanted to do with it, and it was good for that. And then I thought, you know, hey, Todd, have you ever made a camera that's this particular format? And he said, well, no, actually I haven't. But then, you know, he worked it up for me since it's a, you can just sort of, I guess, stretch your model in the computer. And so I was able to get this machine from him, and I took the pinhole that he had in there out and put a really big one in there, relatively big, because I wanted to use it for street photography. And so then I carried that around and took photographs of people in the street, handheld off the tripod, which was kind of, it felt like sacrilege to me in a sense, because for so long I just wanted the camera to be calmly and quietly on the tripod where you could just make sure everything was nice and sharp. And but it doesn't have to be like that. You can do anything you want.
Jeff, somebody when I was posting in the Facebook group about you coming on, somebody had mentioned your solographs. And they were asking about the colors you achieve. Now, my understanding is that's just a function of maybe what paper you're using or the quality of the light or the time. Is that right?
It's a little bit. Yeah, I mean, to some degree. But then again, you know, these things are digitally manipulated. So you can change that. And I mean, you know, again, to Jesus in Barcelona, he's a chemist and he wrote a paper, which he kindly passed on to me, about this subject, where he said, you know, it really bothered him that color was appearing in a supposedly monochromatic photographic medium. And so I can't really explain it, but it seems that it has something to do with the fact that the chemicals in the paper will react differently as more and more light hits them. So the place where the sun hits the paper is going to receive more exposure and get more reaction than the places where it's sort of, say, shadow detail.
The shadows, yeah.
And so that does occasionally produce different colors, and it's not necessarily consistent. I think it has to do with humidity and some other things too. But sure, the different types of paper, for the longest time, I was just using Ilford warm tone paper because Jesus said that he tried different ones and that's what he liked. And I thought, okay, good enough for him, good enough for me. And I used it. And if you scan those things and just invert them and don't do anything else, then they're a really quiet, calming sort of blue. And after a while, the blue's done, it started to grate on me a little bit. So I tried different kinds of paper. But the one thing that I have started to do, which doesn't feel like horrific intervention to me, is to just flip the hue. Because when you open the camera and you see the negative, it looks like a sort of a sepia toned old-fashioned photograph, that's about the color that you get. And then when you, this is the Ilford paper. And then if you invert that, then it's bright blue. Bright blue is, it's okay. You know, it's not terribly natural. So it's interesting to change it. And I've seen some things, you know, posted that people took solar graphs and turned them all sorts of amazing colors. Cause you know, Photoshop, you can make a Martian landscape if you want out of just whatever, about anything.
Yeah, anything you want to do.
Because, and so, you know, I'm not really worried about changing the color of the images as long as it has the feeling that I like. Mm-hmm. And so I have started to change them some, but it's weird because, you know, these images, the light comes from nowhere. They've got all these sun trails going in the sky, but yet you still can, if you're lucky, you can feel the space where the thing was made. And so I don't want to disrupt that too much. And I think the reason why I started getting away from all these blue is because sometimes the blue just doesn't feel right. And right. So I'll try a couple of different things. And if, cause like, for example, there's a couple that I just posted fairly recently. I collected from, down in North Carolina. I went down there for Christmas and I had put a few cameras out. I wish I had done more, but I put only like half a dozen out in this town just west of Charlotte called Gastonia, which is where my grandfather was born and my great grandfather lived mm-hmm. his whole career there. And so it's, I don't know this town very well, but it's sort of an old, you know, small city, mill town kind of a place. And I thought, well, there's maybe some chance there. And so those, the ones that I posted, I'm pretty sure they were made on Ilford paper. And then I just took the hue and bumped it 180 degrees so that the final result is a positive, but yet it's the same color as the negative was.
Yeah, these are the orangey, browny.
Exactly.
Ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
On your Instagram feed.
I'm looking at your webpage, and I'm looking at a picture that's 99 Days of Sun in High Bridge, New Jersey.
Oh, that was one of the first ones.
Yeah, it blows my mind how, like, I mean, like, you can see the cracks in the sidewalks and the bricks and the mortar lines and the bricks and the pickets on the handrails. You know what I mean? Like
good tape.
I don't know.
Use Gorilla tape.
Yeah, sure.
Although there are some in this, you know, I was talking earlier about non-judgmental and sort of accepting and sharing. There are some solar graph police who are like, you can't use tape. You got to use glue. It's not pure, but but you know, the other thing about it is you never know when it's going to work or whether it's going to stay there. Because sure. I've taped cameras and I thought I taped it securely and then it worked its way loose. And then you come back and it's flapping around in the reeds a little bit. And then that picture can be amazing because you've got some crazy motion going on. But sometimes they can be really sharp.
And just like this one, that's the Ukrainian Cathedral in Philadelphia. It's more of a orange, you know, kind of that sepia you're talking
that
about.
That one, I'm pretty sure that's before I started changing the color. And that
I like
is
that
probably
better than
blue. Done. Is the sun red? I can't remember.
Yeah, the streaks are like pink.
Yeah, if you use Oriental paper, just the regular Oriental RC paper, then sometimes it gives a more kind of grayscale look, and it also occasionally the sun turns this crazy red. And that's not artificial. It's just what you get.
I like this sepia warm tone better than I like the blue, but that's just me.
I've just got myself a box of quite old, I think, although it's sealed up, Hungarian resin coated paper. I think it's Forte grade 3 glossy. And I thought this is ideal for experimenting in this sort of thing.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I got a big pile of paper from the place I work in the city, all kinds of old fiber-based paper, and it's all 20, 30 years old. And I've been sort of nibbling my way through it. There's bunches of it that I haven't even tested, and I've given some of it away because it's just so much of it.
Yeah.
But, I sort of prefer the RC papers for solar graphs because water gets in sometimes. Although I know people who love to see
they embrace
the mold
it.
That grows.
They, they embrace it, don't they?
You know, if you open one of those cans and it's moldy, it really doesn't smell so good. Mostly for me, there's no picture when it gets wet inside. I don't know why.
Are you putting little notes on the side of them? I've seen some people do that. Like, hey, this is just a camera. Don't mess with it. You know.
Well, I did at first. The first few, I put it like a long note that explained what it was. And then after that, when I started the big project, I just put a label that had my website on it. And it said something like, you know, 2014-15 Solargraf project. And where I live, this lake that I'm sitting next to, if you go upstream, there's a river, which is supposed to be the best place for fly fishing in New Jersey. And so I found, someone pointed to me, there was a discussion thread somewhere about these cameras, because I seeded them all up in that in that river valley, and there's bunches of them up there now, actually. But anyway, these people were speculating. It's like, well, what do you think it is? Is it some kind of bug research project? And right. I thought, well, there's a website on the side of the can. Just look that up. Because I got calls from a few sort of people who found them. Actually, one was knocked down, and someone's found it and posted it on Instagram and tagged me. So I was able to fix that and get the camera back from her. But I have also had conversations with various local officials and police detectives. Once the police detective made me come down there and pick up the camera from his desk, he's like, well, this is your property, so you need to come claim it. But fortunately, you know, for whatever reason, I got the loony pass, and it wasn't locked up.
Yeah, right.
But and also in New York City, like I did some in New York, and out here where I live, you know, if I put the cameras near a trail, then people take them. Like I just posted one last week where I found it and someone had just vandalized it, and it's annoying, but it happens. You know, I lose about 10%, but I decided in New York City, I couldn't put out soda cans because they're too big and they're too conspicuous. And there was an instance in Atlanta a few years ago where some art student put a Solargraf camera on one of the I-85 bridges running through the middle of town with a note on it explaining exactly what it was. But that didn't stop the police from shutting down I-85 for half a morning and bringing in the bomb squad. I thought, well, okay, for New York, I'm just going to use 35mm film cans. And yeah. I had some success with it, but I lost about half of those. And it's either the glue failed or something fell. And I kept waiting for the time when I was going to get to explain Solargrafs to the NYPD, which hasn't happened yet. But I actually wrote to one of my friends who's had lots of dealings with the NYPD, and I said, listen, this is what I want to do. You know, is it worth calling those people and talking to them? She's like, no, they're not going to help you. Just be aware, whatever you do, you're being watched. And so I thought, well, I don't mind explaining myself, and I'm just sort of like a ordinary middle-aged white guy, which allows me the ability to do these things without being questioned too much, which is a whole nother topic, but anyway, no, so it's amazing. It's a great thing to try.
This picture that you have posted also is Ken Lockwood Gorge.
Yeah, that's sort of right where I'm sitting right now.
And it looks like you're like have the camera pointed up because the trails are literally going, you know, left to right, almost horizontal, you know?
Is the picture vertical or horizontal? Vertical.
It's a vertical picture, yeah. Okay. But the thing I like about the most that amazes me is the water in the bottom. You can see the reflection of the sun trails in the water.
Yeah.
It's like just kind of silhouetted. You know what I mean? Like you can see some reeds.
I try to put them next to creeks sometimes. And
yeah, that's cool, man.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
That's cool. That's a great picture. I like that picture.
Yeah. That's probably my favorite on that site, on that page rather, the Solargraf page. Yeah. Jeff, you're, awesome. We had John Wilkening on the show, some time back, and he was doing a series of pinhole and also I think maybe lensed street blurred images, but did your street life series, did that come before your pictures of people, the Chronopius?
Yeah, no, it came, that's a straight line through. I mean, the street life pictures was that camera I was talking about before that I asked Todd if he could make, and it's just a 6x9 roll film camera, fairly wide and with a big enough pinhole that I could hand hold it, and it's got a cable release shutter on it.
So you ignored any maths problems about, well, this pinhole is obviously not right for that, so you just made a bigger one to let more light in, and they were going to be blurred
I used the Zero Image has a website that's got a pinhole calculator in it, which I find really easy to use. So I just go there every time I want to sort of test something, and I just say, okay, well, if I want to get this aperture, how big does the hole have to be? And then I'll make that. So I don't remember. Todd must have given it to me with some appropriate pinhole size because he makes good holes for those cameras. But I wanted it to take more light in. So I turned it until it was about F90, whatever size of hole that is. And so that's where those pictures, and I decided to print them using Van Dyke Brown sort of a contact printing process. So I made digital negatives and, you know, exposed them in a light box. And so that's what those prints were. But then the Cronopios project wasn't originally called that. It was just the idea, after having made these photos, which were mostly done in street protests, how about isolating the figure in with a pinhole camera on the street?
Yeah.
And since most pinhole cameras that we, you know, that you can buy or that people like to use are really wide, you know, you sort of have, you can see everything. It's like, well, okay, instead of doing that, let's make it really narrow. And so I just thought, okay, and just sort of picked a long focal length. It's 300 millimeter distance between the pinhole and the film. And the film is an old Graflex 6x7 roll film back. So the pictures are 6x7. And then, but the thing about that is once you have a camera that's that long, you got to point that thing carefully because you can only see a little bit. So I had to make a viewfinder for it. And the, what is it called? Don't Take Pictures website. They put a picture of that camera on there under their sort of some assembly required section.
They have a print magazine, don't they? I think I've just subscribed to it for two years.
I keep wanting to get it and then I keep forgetting to do it. Have you gotten it yet?
No,
I'm sure it's beautiful.
I subscribed to it about 3 weeks ago and
I managed to meet Kat, who's behind all that. At there was an event at the Halide Project, which is a new photo space in Philadelphia. If you live in Philly, go there and support them. But she curated a show for them that I went down to see how that was. But so that camera, I just made it, you know, out of some parts that I had laying around and some black cardboard, and fortunately it worked. And so I was able to get these photographs of people walking. And I thought I was going to use a tripod for this because it seemed like it needed to be aimed carefully, but immediately I found that it was just not possible to catch moving people on the street while using a tripod. So I ended up carrying that funny looking box around, and I was going to go for the sort of office people in Midtown. That was my sort of fantasy idea. But when I started photographing people, I started to see the variety, and I thought, well, why only go there? And of course it's mostly done in New York City, although not exclusively, because in New York, it's not far from where I live. And also there's people out walking around all the time. Out here where I live, people are in cars. So you don't really see a lot of people just wandering around or heading to work. Whereas in the city, there's lots of them. So I went there and I went to all different places. I went multiple places in Brooklyn and Chinatown and, you know, all around. But one time twice people said the same thing to me. They're like, what is that thing? You know, it looks like that thing that they used to catch ghosts in Ghostbusters. And I thought, yes, that's exactly what it is. Thank you. I'm keeping that. But then after I had the pictures, I had made all these photographs and it's like, I got to edit these down. And what are they? And there's this, really one of my favorite writers, an Argentine writer named Julio Cortazar, and his most famous book is called Hopscotch, which is, you should all go and read it now. But he also made this little whimsical short story, kind of almost parables about Cronopios and Famas, and also there's Esperanzas in there. And they're just sort of allegorical stories about types of people. And the Cronopios are the ones who are kind of bumbling along and smelling the flowers and then just bemoaning the terrible things that happened to them. And I thought, okay, maybe these guys that I've caught, they're all Cronopios, because they're just, you and me, we're just, you know, trucking along through life and trying to deal with what comes at us. And I liked the fact that they were not terribly defined. You know, in order to get this really long pinhole camera to be able to make an exposure that you could actually see on film, the pinhole is enormous. And I think the aperture number on it, it's like f/1.50, but the pinhole is, it made it with a nail. It's,
wow.
It's 2 millimeters.
Holy cow.
That was fun.
And did you, are you, your exposures, I would think, are no more than a second or so, probably
not even. I mean, I just it had a cable release on it, yeah, and I think I might have probably done some sort of meter reading at some point.
Yeah.
But after a while, it's like when I was really doing this, I would just go like once a week and wander around in the street for half a day and shoot up, you know, 10 rolls of film, and I just did it. You know?
And I see you've now made a limited edition of a book.
Yeah, the images. Books. I made books, and there are still some here.
65 US dollars shipped anywhere in the world. Is that right?
It's the best bargain that you'll ever have. it's been well received thus far. So
it looks great. I'm.
I will tell you with the firmest confidence that you will not be sad.
So you have a on. About 30 minutes ago, when I was feeling sorry for myself, lying on the bed upstairs thinking, do I need medication or can I do the podcast?
Pinhole will save you every time.
I put a post out on the Facebook group saying Jeff is coming on. And I said, to be honest, I feel normally I'm really kind of up for it. And because I think I was feeling a bit poorly, I think I feel a bit overawed because he's like, you know, the work is just incredible, and he's you know, and I'm sitting there. Well, I think, so does anybody have any questions? So it was a bit late in the day, but bless him, Neil Piper, who is clearly a fanboy of yours.
Hello, Neil.
Said, love your work, Jeff. Just like that.
Very kind.
He's got a high pitched squeaky voice. Love your work, Jeff. He sounds just like that. But he said actually he did ask some quite interesting questions, and it touches on what we've just been speaking about with bookmaking. He says, I'd like Jeff to explain a bit about his bookmaking process and maybe how that's evolved. And also anything you can tell us about staging exhibitions. So bookmaking and staging exhibitions were two specific questions from the host of Sutton Whitewash podcast, Mr. Neil Piper.
Well, the bookmaking part, I mean, I put together books of photographs many years ago. I've got, you know, two or three of them that were done sort of back in the early 90s maybe, and I remember I made one really sort of elaborate accordion fold collaged book which was like some of my photographs and just all sorts of found imagery but it was so long ago, and I just kind of left it. And you know, the idea of putting a book together, it's to me it's a bit daunting because you sort of have to edit that, and it's no matter what context the photographs are going to be seen in, it really, it's different every time. Like for these Cronopias, okay, so I sort of made them knowing that there was going to be this exhibition, which was going to happen in Jalapa in Mexico. And so I had an idea in my head of what the space was going to be like, which turned out to be totally wrong, by the way. And so I knew, okay, I want to make these photos. And then how can I present them? And so I made the prints a certain way and I put them there. And then I decided to make a book out of it. And so then it's a matter of, okay, well, what's the material going to look like? How are these photographs going to reproduce? And I decided to print it myself using the inkjet printer because I have it. And I decided on using accordion fold because I sort of like the layout and I've seen it. But then so you're sort of like choosing the sequencing. And so I have, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of these pictures, and out of them all, you know, maybe the book has like 22, I think it is. So I sat with, there's probably pictures on Instagram somewhere of large amounts of 3x5 prints of these pictures just laid out in grids where I try to sort of narrow this down. And eventually I got a book dummy together, which was just a bunch of office paper cut and folded up with paper clips and the images in there. And I'd carry that around with me for a couple of weeks and kind of keep shuffling the pictures around and testing different layouts. And I finally showed it to this place that I've been going to. They changed the name of it. Now it's called Frontline Arts. It's a printmaking studio here in New Jersey where I am eventually going to do the polymer gravure printing, but my life is preventing me from doing this now, which is very sad. But there was a guy working there named Ben who was a printmaking, bookmaking grad student in Philly. And I showed it to him. He's like, oh, you should do this. And he gave me lots of advice about how to bind it. And I had some ideas in my head about what to do But after listening to him and also hearing some practical considerations about what I had thought to do, it changed and became what it is. And I don't know. I mean, I like it. It sort of inspires me to make more books. But then to make more books, you need to collect images for such. And, you know, I've got, there's never going to be any shortage of ideas to fill them. However, getting the work done is always the thing, right?
So you, right. These were completely handmade. And so the cover, oh, yeah. The cover is a sort of a gray texture, isn't it? And you've got the title, I still don't know how you pronounce it.
Chronopios.
And your name. Pinocchio.
Profoundly rubber stamped there on the cover.
Is that what it is? That's rubber stamped.
I was going to print them in letterpress. And then it just seemed that was not going to happen because of time and just the complexities of dealing with getting the ink onto the paper. And you know, I've done lots of rubber stamping with my work with other people's sort of photo editions. And it's like, you know, that'll work. Let's
and you've used origami, not origami.
Oh, yeah, origami.
Awagami. Bamboo paper.
I had a friend of mine works in a place where they do a lot of bookmaking and printing for photographers, and so I knew he would know the answer to this. So I said, "Hey, David, what kind of paper can I use and print both sides?" And he told me two, and this one, since it was bamboo, that kind of intrigued me. Mm. And I think at the time I was getting ready to go. I wanted to have these things done before I went to Patagonia, because back in the fall, I went to Patagonia for this photography festival there, and I sort of just barely finished them, but I was kind of under a time constraint. I was like, okay, I want to do this now. So I just ordered all the paper sort of without testing it. And fortunately I liked it because if I hadn't, then it would have been sad, it's interesting because the paper is very matte. And so the blacks on the images, it's sort of like printing on matte fiber-based paper where, you know, the black doesn't really quite go black. But then, you know, again, with the sort of aesthetic qualities of pinhole photography so many times, it can contribute to that. Because I have silver prints of these same images, and they're quite different because they're done on glossy paper and the blacks are really black. And so they're like a different animal. But the pictures, I think the scale is different too, obviously. But the feeling of the motion of them, and they seem somehow alive to me, and so I'm satisfied with it.
Yeah, I'm just, you posted on Instagram, and folks, you can see Jeff's book on Instagram, and just, it looks really awesome, I have to say. The flow, from what I can see from the Instagram feed, it reads really well, you know, in terms of the way the images are presented and the tonality. So it looks a wonderful thing. And you made a limited edition of 36, is that right?
Yeah, I originally made 25, and then I thought, okay, I'll make some more. So I made another dozen or so, and now there's 36 of them, and they're numbered, so I guess I'm done, which is probably good. I'll have to go on and do something else. Oh, but so Neil was also asking about exhibitions. And that's, I mean, it's sort of like a ridiculous luxury that I had to be able to make a few shows where I could just sort of get a room and do whatever. And then there's a matter of, you know, like, well, how are you going to use that space? And each time it's going to be different. I don't know. What can I say? I just try and make it somehow so that it makes sense and so that everything fits together. Well, for example, in Patagonia, there's a very kind gentleman in the southern tip of Argentina named Eduardo. And Eduardo invited me to this festival and really tried very hard to tell me that I needed to be there. And so through various unpredictable miracles, it turned out that I was able to go. And then after I said I was going to be there, and then he wrote me back, he's like, hey, you know, you're going to give you this big wall. And I think it was a 20 meters wall. And I was like, 20 meters? What am I going to do? That's a lot of space, you know, because my pictures are all small. And so I called another friend of mine who worked in digital production for a long time. I said, hey, you know, how can I get big prints that are quick and inexpensive And she referred me to a sort of online poster printing company. So I was like, okay, you know, it's not going to pass any purist's test for analog photography, but let's give it a shot. So I ordered a couple just to see how they looked. And I was like, yeah, that'll work. And so then I put up these big grids down in Argentina, and you can see the pictures of how the installation looked. And again, it's like, that's different from the book. Is different from putting individual silver prints in matted frames, which was the way it was originally shown. And then you have to sort of not just consider, well, which ones do I like? But it's like, well, do they talk to each other? You know, I decided to hang them in grids of eight. So then I needed to sort of find eight pictures that somehow work together. And then, I was back to the little work prints, you know, sort of laying them out on a big sheet of foam core and carrying it around my house and hoping that, you know, the wind doesn't blow on it and blow up all my work. But, it's fun. It's a challenge, and it's never perfect, but you know, somehow it works.
I was reading in a UK publication called Black and White Photography, which I occasionally buy a copy of when it looks good.
That's a nice magazine.
There was in the January, I think it was probably January's edition, there's a whole section on ways of exhibiting pictures, and it was saying, you know, well, actually, frames are great, but actually using pins, using bulldog clips, you know, in Frank's bar in Norwich, Alex had just hung them on string with clips, and that looked really great, you know. And of course, if you're looking for a space, an exhibition space, and it could, you're not going to be as lucky to be given a 20 meter wall, probably. You might be in a cafe, and so, you know, mounting on a bit of foam core and bulldog clips hung on string or nice wooden pins, you know.
Sure. Awesome. Well, yeah, those posters were all stuck onto that 20-meter wall with push pins.
Yeah.
And they all arrived rolled in one roll in my baggage because it was cost-effective.
Because you'd never be able to do this, you know, with frames. I mean, the cost of framing, the logistics of it all, you know. But
my God, it'd be impossible.
It's bad enough already some of those pictures arrived, like, the day before I was supposed to leave. I was biting my nails right to the end.
But yeah, so you wouldn't want to be framing them, would you? Framing and cutting out mats, you know?
Well, I've done that too. It's tedious, but then in the end it looks good. So.
It does, yeah.
Oh.
Gotcha. So what else did Neil say? Is that all Neil?
That was it, yeah. So thanks, Neil, for being our one person who listened to anything I said and ask a question. So you've got this new book at Christmas time, I guess, all about photogravure, polymer photogravure. What's that? Because you're into sort of alternative processes, and
it's interesting to try things. And sometimes, like for the Street Life ones, you know, I just felt that Van Dyke Brown was. The look of it matched the way I wanted the pictures to be seen.
The Van Dyke brand are almost like salt prints, aren't they?
And although salt print, I haven't had any luck with that. I haven't tried it lately. So, but those can be quite beautiful. But the gravure, I mean, you know, I've known about sort of Alfred Stieglitz and camera work since I started thinking about photography a long time ago. And they always said, well, you know, photogravure was sort of like the gold standard for the ways of printing. But it never occurred to me that I might learn how to do this. But then I went to Oaxaca for one of their pinhole day things a couple years ago, and I met someone there named Byron Brauchley. And Byron is a professor at a university in Jalapa, and he, when he was in school long ago, discovered a big archive having to do with photogravure printing and just taught himself how to do it. Wow. So now he's an expert in this. And he's in that book, which is the reason why I have it, because he told me that, you know, he was going to be in there. And there's some other really great people that some of whom I'm sure you've, you know, seen on social media or heard of otherwise in there. And so anyway, I went down to Jalapa for this to do the exhibition of the Cronopios pictures back in January. And, you know, Byron kindly showed me in his shop, you know, how to do this polymer gravure printing process, which I'd been curious about. You know, actually a friend of mine had been sending me down to someplace in North Carolina called Cape Fear Press. There's a woman there named Jennifer Page, and she is also totally expert in this process. And so not too far from you, Corey, I can't remember where she's at.
Wilmington.
Atlantic Beach. Wilmington. Okay. Anyway, so, but the reason I was interested is because there was a show they put up in Oaxaca when I was there, which had the results of a workshop that Byron had done, where they took a bunch of people and, you know, they brought their pinhole images and they made polymer gravure prints with them. And the quality of the print was so beautiful that I was tempted to try it, of course. And so, you know, I learned, I sort of got a quick workshop with Byron. And then I came home and it's like, well, I can't get one of those presses and put it in my house. The infrastructure is just too much. You need a big specialized light unit to expose the plates, and it's all terribly sophisticated and expensive. But then I found this place. I'd known it was there for years, and it's now called Frontline Arts, and they have the full print shop in there. They haven't been doing polymer gravure though, but I got in touch with the studio director there, and she said, oh yes, I've been dying to do that. Why don't you come down here and let's figure it out? And so I managed to go there every week for a few months until going to Argentina derailed me. And we got sort of to the point of we're almost ready to make the first print, because you have to go through a long process of calibration, and we had to figure out the exposure unit that they had. And so it's all fairly technical and good fun. And I'm massively frustrated that I am not doing more.
So it doesn't sound like anything I'm going to just be doing in my darkroom over a weekend, I think.
No, you need access to I don't even know the words for this, because I've known some people who were printmakers, and that's another planet. You know, it's like it's great, but part of me, you know, I love all these different processes. Like, for example, when down in Argentina, there was a demonstration done by a sort of workshop by this guy from Colombia about daguerreotypes, and making daguerreotypes didn't interest me very much until I saw this demonstration. I was like, wow, that's incredible. Yeah. I would love to do that. But because it's like I had tried a few years ago, I got worried that film was going to go away. And I thought, well, I need to still be able to make photographs even if there's no film. And, you know, wet plate collodion was having a resurgence. So I went to Brooklyn and took a class because I knew that I wanted to try it. And I also knew that I needed to have my hands in this, in that stuff before I could know anything about what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so I played with that for a while until it just became clear that I don't have time in my life to run wet plate shoots. But the advantage of the daguerreotypes over wet plate is, for collodion, you need to bring everything with you to the site, and you need to work it right then and there. And it's a bit of an ordeal. It's manageable. You know, clearly Timothy O'Sullivan did it with mule trains, but you know, I'm not him. But the daguerreotypes you can prepare in advance, and then just they're good for a couple weeks. And the image is just amazing.
Right.
I mean, you can't really reproduce it. That's another downside to it.
I've wanted,
but maybe that's an upside too, you know.
I've wanted to get into tintypes and doing the wet plates and that whole side of it. And I like have to, I have a ton of stuff I want to do, but I really have
salt
to
printing.
Like, yeah. Salt
you need,
printing
you
too.
Need, you need a tolerant family.
Well,
you know, my kids got used to the smell of collodion and ether and all those things. And some people wouldn't allow it in their house, but
I have to, I have a pretty tolerant family. I mean, my problem is that whenever I started getting into something new, I just totally go down that rabbit hole, and I just, you know, I just 5 months later, I shake my head. I'm okay. Well, you know, what was I doing before? You know, so like I have
the worst things could happen.
Yeah,
it's not a bad thing.
I have so many things going on in my life that I have to kind of, I really enjoy just, you know, doing contact prints and shooting negatives. And like, I wish, you know, I have to like stop myself, because if I don't, I just go off on tangents. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Just
speaking of tangents, since I'm looking at the clock here, I'm going to throw a shout out to Oaxaca Estinalpeca, because they're having their 10th Semana Estinalpeca week of pinhole.
Cool.
Which really spreads out to like more than a month. She just had a big a workshop down there with Natasha Ebers from Argentina. Went to Oaxaca and did a big, you know, a couple days workshop, and they are going to have many exhibitions and workshops and all kinds of stuff happening down there. And I think they haven't even filled up their dance card yet. But if you ever have any occasion to be in Oaxaca in the end of April, than the people of the organizations down there. Where is Oaxaca? Oaxaca. Well, I'm not so brilliant on my geography, but it's southwest of Mexico City.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right.
Yeah. And, it's near the coast, yeah, I believe.
In fact, well, yeah, I think you have to take a bus for a couple of hours. But there's the story of pinhole photography in Mexico. There's an important figure named Carlos Jurado, who was a painter originally, and his children asked him questions about cameras, and it sent him down that rabbit hole into pinhole photography. And he wrote an amazing text, which is, I can't remember the exact title, but it's something to do with, you know, unicorns and the alchemy of image making. And there's this metaphorical text which sort of talks about alchemists in Middle Age times and the various different kinds of unicorns in a way of talking about how you can make images with a simple box. And this guy and his book have inspired so much in the sort of Spanish-speaking world of photography, and it's sort of a shame that he's not better known here.
Is it translated into English, or is it just in Spanish?
Don't think so. I think I tried to translate it. There's a website which has the full text, and I can't remember if it has English on there or not, but it's worth it even if you're like me and are derelict in learning other languages, because he's sort of an inspirational character. And he's
like
still
it.
Down there
sounds
in
like
Mexico
it, yeah.
City. So but you know, and again, not just Oaxaca, but you know, there's such a amazing community of pinhole photography people. There's like Pavlovka Gallery in Kiev. There's a bunch of pinhole people in Buenos Aires. There's a huge contingent there in Lithuania. You can find the ones like Cesare who are willing to speak to you in English and corral them into doing this podcast. I think that would be great.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Andrew, you there?
My throat's slowly giving up, mate.
Poor all right, Andrew.
Well,
yeah. his health is giving out. I can see you really are prepared for retirement there.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff,
mind you, the first time I've spoken to you, I'll just say rude things right off the bat.
No, that's fine. No,
don't mind me.
It's normally it's normally me doing that.
Yes. Well, you are English. That's the English way, isn't it?
Yeah.
You want to maybe give Corey, send him some of these folks you've been talking about, because I don't know if he's written them down. And Corey puts together some show notes. They're a bit rubbish, really, as show notes. But
no, I don't think so. I see those links that you add on. It's a good
yeah.
Thing. Thank
so,
you.
Mind you,
finally, just a little bit. That's all I asked for. Just a little tiny bit. That's
hey,
it.
Congratulations. You know, all the back pats to both of you for making this thing happen. Honestly, and unfortunately, I'm sure that half the things that I mentioned, I've now forgotten since I'm just sitting here, looking at the trees and the blowing wind on the lake in front of me, rambling on about simple photos and you know.
Are you fully dressed?
World community. No, absolutely not. No, I'm gonna be one of those polar bear people and dip in the lake as soon as we hang up here.
Oh, nice!
I'm getting ready.
Somebody call 911.
You could
it's okay because I live in the country. There's no one here.
There's no one there.
No one will notice.
Well, I'm amazed that we've got a guest sitting in a car in the middle of nowhere with just a fantastic internet connection, and we've had no
modern
problems.
Technology.
Yeah.
And in the United States, I think the service is probably better almost everywhere else. But here we're captive to the cell phone companies.
Although I did interview Zeb Andrews when Corey was off on, you know, he was on holiday or something. And Zeb was actually making an exposure all the time we were speaking. And he was.
Of course he was.
And he had random drunk people come up to him, and there was helicopters and railroad cars and all sorts of wonderful sound effects.
Ah, see, if I'd known you wanted ambient sound, I could have parked somewhere else or gotten out of the car. Here, there's nothing here. I don't see no rambling bears coming by to check me out.
Everybody asking for change?
No, there's a few
cup of coffee.
It's people come along here and they wander around in the woods with enormous lenses on the fronts of their cameras and take pictures of birds. So there's been some tourists coming by, but no, it's pretty quiet.
Cool.
No, shocking skinny dippers in the lake today. And it's melted, so no ice skaters either.
Oh, there you go.
Last week it would have been skating. We've got that yo-yo weather going on.
Well, Andrew's going to be retiring soon, so he'll be doing that crazy winter polar bear swimming and stuff, I think.
Yeah, don't you have to go down to, you know, this Brighton Pier and hop in the water on New Year's Day, something like that?
Yep. I won't be doing that.
Come on, Andrew.
You're going to go down there with your pinhole camera and photograph the people who do. Like, there's somebody... Well,
things shrink when you go in such cold water, don't they?
No.
Your pinhole camera? You don't have to bring your camera in with you.
There's a guy in New York named Stefan Killen, and he's gone down to the Coney Isle and Mermaid Parade with his cameras a few times.
I've seen those pictures, because doesn't everybody get dressed up?
Yeah, there's a parade. I've never been. It's that part of Brooklyn's far enough. You sort of have to work hard to get there from here.
You've been trying to get...
Since I brought up Stefan, this has nothing to do with... pinhole photography, but apparently it's some anniversary of Walt Whitman's birth, and therefore Stefan has put together a project about celebrating Walt Whitman, because for those of you who are not in the United States, Walt Whitman really was patriotic in a critical way, which is something that we need now.
I've tried reading some of his poems, and I struggled a bit, really, but that's probably just me being...
You just got to drink more.
Yeah.
It's really exuberant, I think. And I'm not one for reading poetry so much, although I did just buy one book that my friend recommended to me, and I said, listen, Nick, you know it's poetry. Yeah. He's like, no, it's really okay, so I'm going to give it another try.
I read Lorraine Healy's poems. I like. She sent me a couple
Walt
of
Whitman's
books.
Walt Whitman's quite, that's eminently readable, I would say, and important.
Maybe I'll go back to it.
Again, he's paying attention. That's what photography is for me, is you have to see where you are. You have to think about what you see. You have to interpret things somehow. And this is why pinhole photography can be a useful tool, because it requires a little bit more thought, perhaps. You can do it thoughtlessly also, but it's a chance to engage the world.
Yeah, sure.
Which is what any image making process is, whether it's using cameras or drawing or anything.
Anything.
But it's and I'm grateful that there's a big community of like-minded folks such as yourselves.
As we all are, because they provide us with a big guest list.
Indeed.
Endless, almost.
Well, we've got Astro Beck on next week. Becky Rome, I forget her surname.
Ramatowski.
Yes, that's it.
She's going to do it. Good for her.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's coming on.
She's
another,
coming on.
Another American that I didn't meet, because our country is too big.
Yeah.
And people... But she lives in the desert, which is a great place that I would love to go to more often.
Mm-hmm.
When she puts pictures of Highway 66 up, then it makes me want to get in my car and drive for 4 days.
Absolutely.
And Jeff, you're not that far from me. We should plan a pinhole.
If you come
weekend,
to New York,
man,
then call me. Come on down. I mean, I don't go to New York North Carolina that often, because I mean my family's there, so I go and visit, you know, just for a few days at a shot. But if anybody's, if you're ever in New York, it's not so far from me. I'll go there and we go have a beer somewhere at least.
Cool.
For sure.
Awesome. Well, if you want
wander
to
around.
Let everybody know where they can find you at, Jeff.
Well, the usual social media places. There's a Jeff McConnell photography page on Facebook. There's Instagram. It's like Jeff McConnell photo or something. I cannot remember.
Jeff McConnell underscore photo.
Right. There is a website which occasionally I might look at and which probably needs updating desperately. And that's probably good enough.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have all the links in the show notes. Andrew, I'll put the
those
links in
wonderful,
the show notes.
No, those wonderful show notes. Yep.
Those are essential. We need those. We got to be able to read Carlos Jurado.
Okay.
Practice your Spanish. I'll do it with you.
All right. All right. Well, Andrew, you got anything else you want to say? Or?
not really. No. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we don't have a we don't have a really catchy ending to end the show. We just kind of say goodbye to each other.
Haven't you got a drum cat there?
We don't have a catchphrase. Maybe we should ask people for a good catchphrase to end the show.
I'll ask my son. Yeah. My son wants catchphrases for everyone.
Really?
He's 11. Yes.
Awesome.
He keeps trying to saddle me with one, and I'm resistant.
I kept trying shoot pinholes, be nice, but with that.
Well, what about Todd's pinholing is not a crime?
Yeah.
It's not really a catchphrase, though, is it?
Yeah.
Well, we could just end off sign off saying, remember, folks, pinhole is not a crime.
I'm going to put we got a call in from Matt Jones. I'm going to drop that in at the end of the show so everybody can hear it.
Good day, Matt.
Yep. I wish I could say it in Thai. I don't know how to say good day, Matt, in Thai. So, Andrew, I'll let you try that one. I'll leave that up to you.
Yep.
All right.
Should we go then?
Yeah, we'll do it.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. It's been a great time. I'll wait and hear myself.
Well, you sound okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you. I'd never have guessed you were sick.
You sound great for such a sick old guy, Andrew.
I'm not buying
it. Right, I'm going. I've had enough of you one evening. I'm going to drag myself off my sick desk and go and cook dinner for my wife now.
All right.
She says, you're not sick. Get in that kitchen and cook for me.
Exactly.
Now.
You're faking it. I can tell.
We hope everybody has a great week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week and gals next week. All right.
Thanks again.
Bye, everybody. Thanks, Jeff. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, Lensless Podcast guys, Andrew and Corey. I'm here with my wife, Fon.
Hello, Andrew and Corey.
Yeah, and I know Corey had a go at pronouncing where we live in Thailand. So I thought I would just get Fon on to say it correctly. Where do we live in Thailand?
We live in Krasang.
In the province of?
Yeah.
Buriram?
Yes.
Isan?
Yeah, somewhere in Isan.
Okay, so Krasang, Isan.
Krasang. Yeah, not really Isan because the local people, they speak Khmer.
Anyway, close enough.
Yeah, okay.
What do you think of my pinhole photographs?
Well, so-so, but not too clear.
Okay, very honest. Okay, thank you, and see you guys.
Okay, bye.
Or you just call things incorrect, like... You call taps faucet, which is clearly wrong.
and you say now, aluminium.
We'll keep the transatlantic rivalries down. So I'll tell you my favorite story about getting accosted with a pinhole camera. I was